the platform. Step up and speak out.
It is indeed a good evening and welcome to ZFM Stereo. My name is Ladi Kwedera. It is the platform, and thank you very much for making us your station of choice. And just to remind you of some of the frequencies you can listen to us on, Bybridge 106.1, Mutarashanga 97.6, Nyanga 98.2, Gweru 104.3, Vulao in my hometown 106.7, and we're broadcasting out of Harare, where our frequency is 106.4. If you want to listen to us over the internet, it's www.zfmstereo.co.zw, and of course if you want to listen to us via the TuneIn app, you can download that for free and just look for ZFM Stereo. And of course the conversation is live. Just go to just get in touch with us on WhatsApp. It's 0731 168 045. That's where I'll be getting your feedback, and also on Twitter at ZFM Stereo, on Instagram at ZFM Stereo ZW, and of course facebook.com/ZFM Stereo. And today is a topic that has been, I think, has been on the tongue of everybody over the past couple of weeks. The civil servants have demanded salaries in United States dollars following the price increases and the rejection of the bond note and electronic transfers by some shop owners and service providers. And in the studio tonight to help us tackle this issue, I've gotten here, first of all, the chairperson of the Apex Council, Mr. David Zatsunga. Thank you very much for joining us. Secretary, we'll just get that corrected. I guess it was, it hadn't been updated.
Thank you very much, and good evening to your listeners.
Okay, and then also here I've got the Chief Executive Officer of Zimbabwe Teachers Association, Sifiso Lofe. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Larry, and good evening, Zimbabwe.
So, you know, we'll start off with the issue of the bonuses to start with. Professor Mthulingwe recently announced that the bonus of civil servants now only apply to individuals' basic salaries, which is excluding allowances and so forth. Starting with this question, how much does one actually receive when accounting from the from just the basic salary?
Oh, well, it's just around 300. Differs with the grades, but that's just about 300 instead of probably 600 or 700.
So instead of a bonus of 300, so essentially,
you get a bonus. Now you are getting a bonus of 300
on your basics.
Yeah, okay. That's on your basics, because our basics are just around 300 thereabout, and most of the money is in the salary is in allowances already.
Okay. And what, in your opinion of that?
Larry, if I may speak with some bit of nostalgia, the introduction of a bonus was a long-fought struggle, not in the contemporary systems of administering civil service, but as far back as 1976, it was introduced by Ian Douglas Smith and his team, and at that time we celebrated that we're being recognized with the 13th check. 13th check meant that you got an equivalent salary to what was your monthly salary. And that created also the impression that you are being recognized for hard work. And over the years, we fought hard to get the bonus and also to include the other allowances, which included transport and housing, so that the remuneration, the 13th remuneration, does not come less these allowances as a way of thank you and government obliged. And this has been an agreed position which was signed for and agreed for at the National Joint Negotiating Council levels. This is quite some time back. But now, for our finance minister to unilaterally withdraw the allowance without reverting to those agreements, without coming back to the table and discussing with the affected parties that this is what is going to be done, only to throw in a bombshell, is a complete disregard of the dignity of consultation. This is why there is a contention about the bonus. It is outrightly unfair. And so we want that reversed, and our demand is simple. He must restate that and come back to the table if he has to reduce anybody's remuneration, which has been fought for and won. And otherwise, won't trust government, won't trust the government team when we go for negotiations.
0731-168-045. Just note that we did try to get in touch with the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, but we were unable to get them onto the show to just get a different perspective in as far as this particular issue is concerned. So, coming back to the APEX Council side, how feasible is this?
Well, you know, the problem that we normally have as workers is that we want to interrogate how the employer is going to be able to meet his obligations. It's really not our business. If I want to be honest, if you employ somebody, you know very well that you will pay them and you have the capacity to pay them. And as my colleague from the Zimbabwe Teachers Union, Comrade Sifiso, says, it's critical here that government always prioritizes consultation. Section 65 of our constitution gives us the right to consult and be consulted. And the whole decision to withdraw the bonus or to give us bonus minus allowances was done without consultation. And we can't say the government is not has capacity or doesn't have capacity. In fact, we believe it's feasible in the sense that immediately after announcing that measure, the bonus, before we even could say bonus, the bonus was in our accounts. So that means government has got the capacity to pay that. That's my considered view.
Same question.
My feeling, my thinking is that that was a preemptive strike. A preemptive strike that was meant to probably shroud the other developments that would follow. To make us believe that we are getting into austerities and everybody will be having austerity measures placed on their laps. The bonus is reduced, and at the same time there is an announcement in the budget that from the grade of principal director upwards to the executive, they will reduce their salaries by 5%. Then when you look at that comparatively and look at that cumulatively, it's a token of change that people in the upper grades have had their salaries reduced. It is preemptive in the sense that it gives you a kind of a screen that you will make you believe we are all going to be seeing that. But look at it now. We are seeing still the expenditure of government going up. There's no reason why we are not being told when they did tell us that they're going to be reducing. But when I heard a few days ago that the minister, after all, will be making the vehicles that he said are not available, will be making them available very shortly from that same budget, it shows to me that he is also not very truthful in that regard. So to me, that was a smokescreen. So we're made to believe that we are going to have a reduced salary. And for sure, it was reduced, because even in his budget statement, it indicated he was going to give us quite less when we looked at the figures comparatively with what he paid last year.
Do get in touch with us, as I said, on 0731-168-045, that being our number. Let's have the discussion. What do you think about this kind of state of situation? Already the teachers are saying that they were already getting the majority of their salary already as allowances. So if that comes up and that payment is being done as far as the bonus only be done on a basic salary, the feasibility is being discussed here. Now, there's a discussion on what's happening is what they call the salary caravan. Do you know anything about it?
No, I'm not sure.
It's where some teachers are going to be walking from rural areas to come to the city of Harare to come and table their concerns. Is it something that you have any investment in it? Maybe it's not called the salary caravan in where you come from, but I'm sure you've heard about it.
I'm not sure whether that is a platform for negotiation or it's a platform for expression and maybe it's a protest in the form of a procession. I won't comment much because I have not been privileged with its aims and objectives. But like you are saying, if people are marching for Isara, probably they are demonstrating and teaching the public as they move in their march, in their procession. Hopefully when they get here, they'll still have shoes. Otherwise, they may have to look for money to buy shoes. I want to believe Mtare is quite some distance on foot.
Okay, so being aware of the fact that they're coming from Mtare, I mean, you did say you didn't know much about it, but I mean, the fact of the matter that you're speaking about a specific location. Obviously, the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, it represents a section of the teachers. Are you saying that the teachers' unions are not in communication with each other in as far as possible strategy or even just for informing each other?
I think, Larry, you are right. If I am regurgitating what the media has put, I don't have authoritative knowledge about it. Authoritative knowledge would mean that I've got the word from the horse's mouth. But this time around, I have not shared that. But if it is a one way of carrying out the struggle, why not carry it out? Yes, good luck. Wish them well. And one would have wished, if that was the case, then that we could have collaborated with other unions to see whether that is the best strategy of engaging the employer in making them understand the predicament of the teacher.
So as Zimta, you wouldn't, without being critical, you wouldn't necessarily being critical, would you say that is not the best strategy?
I'm not sure whether I need to be educating the public in that way now. I think we've done quite a lot of advocacy. But if it is a way of making it public for the benefit of the world and other people and the media in general, then that is fine publicity. But if it is for the engagement of the employer, I don't see how effective this is going to be, because the employer may not respond to a process of that nature. The employer may need to be engaged through the formal processes. And the formal processes are those that are regulated by the law, the regulations that we have. And I think that is the best that we can do.
Okay. So now, there was something that happened. Some members, of some of your members, civil servants and so forth included, walked out of negotiations with the government recently. What was the reason?
Yeah, we met government just about a couple of days ago with a view to listen to or to have them come up with or some response to the demands that we had made on the bonus issue, on civil service rationalization, and a few other issues that we believe to be critical. Also the cost of living adjustment that we think is already late given what is happening in the economy. And the meeting really did not take off in the manner that we would have expected, because government came to the table without any offer. Instead, there were a lot of platitudes. There was a lot of, talk to do with educating us about the kind of challenges that the economy is facing. And we felt that it was not really the mandate of the National Joint Negotiating Council to then really do anything about what challenges government is facing in terms of turning around the economy. What we wanted to hear was, what was government saying about our bonus? Is there any response as far as that request to have our full bonus is concerned? Is there a cost of living adjustment that is in the offing? What are government's plans regards civil service rationalization and all that? So really, after listening to the government representatives in that meeting, we came to the conclusion that it was really, it was a lame duck meeting. We were chasing our own tail, and we decided that it was in our best interest to leave.
And so what was the so that for the people sitting at home, everybody just sits there. I know you mentioned some of the things in passing, things like cost of living and adjustments and so forth. Everybody just talks about the US dollar salary component, but I think a lot of people are not very appraised on what the full range of the demands of the teachers from the employee are.
Yeah. These are demands from the civil service, because Apex Council represents the civil service. Everybody, teachers, SIMTA is part of Apex Council. We are part of the Apex Council and every other union that organizes in the public sector. So the demands are very clear. The first and most important demand was on the bonus issue, to say we want our bonus in full. We don't want it to be the way they paid it out, that is without exclusive of allowances. And then we gave them a basket, what do you call it, where we were saying right now, if you know, cost of living, for a cost of living adjustment, to say for a family of six, really right now they would need, for the bare basics, they would need something like 1,700 just to be able to eat and go to work and send children to school and go to a hospital or go into a pharmacy and buy drugs and so forth.
And so, when you say 1,700, is that in US dollars?
No, not in US dollar. Okay. Yeah, but then we have come around to say perhaps that demand, we needed an answer to say what is government going to do about that. But this was a demand that we then decided to have, with hindsight, look at and say, how does it help us if we are going to have our 1,700 in RTGS? And when government is being less than honest when it says RTGS or bond note is 1-to-1 with the US dollar, that's like sending us to carry water in a basket. You know, these currencies are obviously very different. And so we're trying to say to ourselves, what is important right now is we need a cost of living adjustment, something that will make us survive, be able to survive in this economy. Otherwise, we might just as well perish.
Okay, so I've got a question here. Thank you very much for getting in touch with me on 0731-168-045. The first question is, I think, first of all, pertinent to you. Somebody says, where is the money going to come from? So, pursuant to that, have you done a calculation of how much money is needed and where it will come from for what you feel, say, the $1,700 to be paid?
Right. Let me be very honest. We always get these questions. I think the crisis in Zimbabwe is that you have sometimes citizens who have children who go to school, who want the people who spend the day with their children looking after them to be miserable. You know, you are not, when you don't look after teachers and other civil servants, you're not helping yourself. You're just creating serious problems for yourself. But let me be more focused and say, we have never interrogated, because it's not within our purview where government gets money. What we know is that when I wake up in the morning and go to work and put in honest day's work, an 8 to 5 days work or more, depending, I, at the end of the month, I expect to get a paycheck that will reproduce me so that I can be able to go back to work. The situation that we have now, given the things that are happening, the shenanigans that are happening in the economy, people cannot, are increasingly getting to a point where they will not be able to go to work. They will not be able to pay school fees for their children. They will not be able to afford the health care. They will not be able to do the basic things that they, or feed their families. And this is what we are saying. Government is to find that solution. Government is to find that money. And we cannot come to government and say, we want 1,700 and this is where you are going to get it from. How do we know that? How do we get into that? Just like he says, there is a lot of inequality. There is affluence that is quite apparent in the economy. There are people who have money, who are buying some of the state top-of-the-range vehicles. Executive expenditure is at a high. Everybody who needs these top-of-the-range cars from government are getting them. And when government says there is no money, how are we supposed to believe that? Or is it that we are not a priority? That's our belief. So Really, when somebody asks me where the money comes from, really, they are simply giving me a task that is not really mine.
Okay.
Before you come in, there's one statistic that government uses, which clouds and which probably buttresses what David was saying. When they talk about per capita GDP, we are averagely told that is probably the average income that Zimbabwean would have by this year. And the minister was saying that our per capita GDP is 1,642. But going down and look at the poverty and disaggregate the poverty circles, you may find that the teachers are far less than that level. So in other words, the wealth is now accumulated and is secured in a few individuals. And when you say where will the money come from, government will get the money from those who have it, so that it is distributed. And we must applaud them for making an attempt to talk about taxes, and at least this time around to try and be inclusive in the taxation. And that is a way of raising resources. And when they raise those resources, then they should play them and pay them very thriftly. Use the money thriftly and not to squander it. And besides, we are already paying for past sins or past debts that they've created. So the answer to the question is simple. Is we may not be the economists, which we are not anyway, to advise government where the money will come from. But what we know is life is unbearable. So we can only give them the standard and the quality of life that the educators are experiencing, and the abuse that we are receiving from their statistics, which seems to put us together in the same basket with those who are quite rich enough to be enjoying life and at their expense.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When I come back, we want to continue to interrogating those issues. Get in touch with us on 0731-168-045. And I think it's important before we take the break to talk about prioritizing the welfare of everybody. And in that kind of context, I want to read this message. It says the government isn't prioritizing the welfare of civil servants. The finance minister must be made aware that the bonus is no longer a privilege but a right of these servants. Secondly, and honestly, the teachers are treated on leftovers compared to uniformed forces. This is, I hope, just trying to read more. This is Mandla Mpofu from Alistair Nyamandlovu, who says that Minister Mthuli must tackle fiscal indiscipline first, and the money to buy vehicles is there. Why have we not enough for the Ministry of Education to transport servants? So do get in touch with us. And someone else also says teacher salaries are a joke. Please pay them. So give us some of those messages coming in on 0731-168-045. It's FM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town.
One of those things, man, we're going to drive you crazy.
The platform. Step up and speak up.
You're still tuned into ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. It is Larry Kwididai. It is a platform, and in the studio we are discussing somebody says, I don't know what the solution is. I just know that it is a sobering problem. So it's one of those things where reality, I think, if you're sitting at home or in a fuel queue, wherever you are right now, it's a sobering thought. Because the $300. I know people saying, someone said teacher salary is a joke. Please pay them that basic salary out there. David Zatsunga, the secretary of the Apex Council, is still here with us, as well as Sifiso Love, who is the chief executive officer of the Zimbabwe Teachers Association. I've got a question here that's come up that says, I'm just going to look for it here. I'd save it here. It says, will teachers go on strike early next year if the demands are not met?
I think I've always been here on air talking to Zimbabweans. The solution of engagement is not engagement through conflict first. Yeah, so strike is a sign that there has been a declared conflict, and that conflict is being brewed by intransigence. And if you build up the anger of educators, you are not probably satisfying their needs. And in that way, you are only fueling them to say, yes, we'll end up not going to work. But this time around, it's not a strike that teachers are talking about. They are saying we will be incapacitated. In other words, currently, they are already subsidizing the employer by way of going to work using a salary which is now minus what they should be getting. If we have to use the purchasing power parity, that means looking at what they were earning last year and what they're getting today. Today they are minus $190, meaning that the teacher is poorer today, and therefore if he was to buy anything, that means during the course of the year he has been subsidizing the employer. What does he subsidize from when we are talking about this mega salary? So it means he will fail even to lift his foot out of the house because he has not eaten. He will fail to leave the house because the water is not there for him to bath, because the utilities man has blocked the water. He has been unable to pay. So that is the scenario. So to suggest that we are going to go on strike is suggesting that we are prone to going to strikes. But we are saying the teachers will be incapacitated. They will tell you, we cannot move. And it's true, because their banks will be empty. Where do they get the money from? That's the reality.
Okay, and so when I think about it, that is a point I think that hits home in a lot of people, that I'll just not be able to pitch up for work, like, just can't. Mm-hmm.
That's true. That's what we have told government. There is a point where you talk of a strike, but there is a point where it's pointless to talk of a strike. And this is one such instance where you realize that you can't afford the combi, fair, you can't afford, your own children have not gone to school, they are hungry. And I mean, as long as the situation is the way it is, it's going to be impossible for people to go to work. And so we can't call for a strike at all, because it's already there.
So when you say it's already there, in what context?
By another name, Sifiso says, incapacitation. You know, you don't have the capacity, because work is supposed to reproduce you. That's the nature of work. I go to work, it reproduces me. It makes me a better person. It makes me able to bath, to clean my teeth, to dress properly, and then be able to go to work with the dignity that it takes, the dignity of labor, you know? And here, the dignity of labor is not there. And when you are indignified by the employer, and you look at the fact that, how do I get there? Even getting there, how do I get there? Then I'm saying, if people will just be unable to go to work.
I've got someone on Twitter calling himself independent, says, this is the accusation made against Apex. It says, Apex is toothless. They are pro-government in all their contribution in as far as workers are concerned, especially the Zenta guys. Formal processes bring nothing to the table. Apex Council doesn't represent the majority of civil servants, especially teachers. It's a farce. That's the accusation that's been made.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the problem with our labor landscape right now is to do with some of the splinterisms that come in. There are unionists sometimes who badmouth other unionists, take them down in the press and so forth. We have never spoken to that, and we're not going to dignify that with a reaction. The point that people are accused of being pro-government or being unable to do this or that is neither here nor there. The issue here is, as unionists, under the environment, under the legal environment that we are operating in, we're doing just our best. We are very much concerned about the welfare of workers, because that's what makes us unionist in the first place. And for anyone to go public and say Zimta or Apex are sellouts and all that, those kind of terminologies are obviously meant for people who are not really about uniting the union movement. I don't know what they want the workers to do. Let me give you one very important example. Vulnerable workers are very difficult to organize, because our workers are vulnerable. People are thinking of that little that they are getting. If they can't get it any day, another day, they are in trouble. Sometimes people want us to go for strikes when it's not feasible to do so. Because a strike has to be something that you organize that will bring people. You have to make sure that people are going to turn out. But if workers are not prepared, because it's not the Apex Council or the unions that decide that we should go on strike. That's not what unionism is all about. It's the workers themselves that push the leaders to say, we want to go on strike. We have seen people who have said, we are organizing marches and then 20 people come. Eh? We are doing this and then 10 people come. And then you go about and saying, some people who didn't come are sellouts. I think this is victim blaming and victim shaming, and it's uncalled for.
Zimta?
Yeah, I think I'm used to the kind of the smart slinging that we are getting in here. And the Zimbabwe Association is the oldest trade union in the education sector, with over 79 years of experience in this, and therefore we understand what toddlers would obviously say, and this is what they will play with. When we have been bringing transformation and change to the lives of the educators in this country. So for one good reason, we want to tell them clearly that it is the wrong tree that they are barking at, because I should be having them assisting with the firepower than firing at my back.
And I may want to add as well, the Apex Council is a creature of statute. It is the only vehicle through which workers currently, under the current law, can interface with government. There is no other way. And everybody knows that the statutory instrument that establishes the Apex Council has got its limitations in terms of what workers can do, which is why we are working towards forcing the hand of government to align the statutory environment with the Section 65 of the Constitution. Because one, people don't understand that we don't enjoy collective bargaining rights as workers. And that's an archaic law. And we have been fighting government to say government must speedily actually align the statutory environment with the Constitution, so that we establish a collective bargaining chamber. Collective bargaining gives us other attendant rights: the right to consult and be consulted, the right to a fair and reasonable wage, the right to strike. We don't have that right as civil servants. And the only, even when you look at Marx, the only weapon in the hands of the worker is his labor. You know, all we should be able to do now is to withdraw our labor legally. But right now, if we do that, our members can be vulnerable, you know. They can be victimized and so on. So I'm saying we're doing what is possible within the legal framework, which for all intents and purposes is oppressive.
Okay, for the people sitting at home wondering what Section 65 is all about of the Constitution, it's the one on labor rights. So if you want to go check it out, and you can understand what the context of the discussion is and how Apex is handled by in as far as that is concerned, and the alignment to the Constitution that's needed to be done. Now, I've got a message here. I sympathize with the teachers. In my family of four, we live off barely as much as these teachers. And trust me, it's very difficult to get past the month. And then I had another message here that I'm just opening here. And while I'm opening this message, somebody says, yes, this one is, the teachers are blessed. They do extra lessons, and on average, they get $700 per month. Isn't that enough bonus, says WizTech Z?
I think here we're talking about what is statutorily your benefit from the employer. If I do extra work at my own time, that is moonlighting. And that alone should be seen as a way that will infringe into the profession, because it will lead to corruption, where I may not deliver 100% of my time to the students, only to expect them to come back to me later for extra lessons. That would be unethical. So we don't want to encourage that level. While extra lessons that the people are bringing up are ordinarily what we have been saying in the past are lessons for corrections, for remedial actions, for the upliftment or at least the development of the student who is good, and that has never been coming with a remuneration. And the history of that is coming from the African teacher who was having the child at heart, who saw the African child failing to attain good marks so that they can succeed during the colonial period. And so we introduced these extra lessons, and they were for no remuneration. But when they are attached with remuneration, they become distorted. And so we may not want, therefore, to Christian that as the legal route of getting what is due to you.
So what is the legal position on that? Are teachers allowed to do extra lessons?
Those are done on special conditions. Schools apply to the ministry and they are given the rates at which they will charge and the period at which that will be done. If it is in preparation for exams, for example, and you want to cover up some lost ground or something, or you want to do some bit of remediation, then you do so with the approval from the ministry. But if I go to my backyard and use the kitchen as one of my classrooms, then that is not probably a conducive environment. And parents would better be advised not to do so, because you are opening your children to abuse. Besides, the sanitary conditions where the children are may not be up to scratch. But if they are, then good luck. But then that is also an opportunity to have children exposed, and that is not the best for a professional system to encourage.
So now, going back to Catherine Chuma, also from Nyamandlovu, who says government should view unions as platforms of complaining and a passage of industrial action and not as political opponents. That is Catherine Chuma from Nyamandlovu. And attaching to that, there was the walkout that took place for whatever the reasons. Is there an expectation on the date in which the discussions will resume?
Nothing to that extent has come to our attention so far. We simply said when government has something substantial to offer, then they could call us back. We think the ball is now in the government's court to see how best they are going to deal with that situation. We are content to be just watching from there and talking to our members and listening to the applied and advising them on the way forward, and probably just commiserating together to say what do we do. But at the moment there is no as far as the date of the next meeting is concerned, then we just wait for comment.
So in the context of this, could it be a case of somebody here was saying, let me read their message, that the fact that it is you guys that walked out, shouldn't you be the ones that sort of say, okay, this is what we want to come and do and have, in as far as coming to have the meeting? Because you're the ones walked away from the table. Government is not the one that walked away from the table.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the setup is that we had given government our demands, and we thought that government would address those demands. But when government came to the meeting, they had nothing.
I think the walking out again is not a token, not a symbol.
Yeah.
But this is a communication to government that take us serious.
Yeah.
And before you can, and this is a demonstration of how deep-seated the anger is of the workers. So it shouldn't be seen as something that was probably people making
a grandstanding, grandstanding, yeah, whatever. No, you know,
look, this was in closed doors.
Yeah.
And whoever picked it up because it came out. But this was a closed door, and the people walked out and to demonstrate that you are not serious. In as much as you indicated that the labor environment needs to be changed. So we sincerely now need to get to civil service collective bargaining. This idea of consultation is the lowest level that you can find in any social dialogue, and that is cheating the other parties. We need to agree. For example, the matter at hand on the bonus issue should have been agreed before the announcement of the budget. Because look, if we are drawing our cake from the budget, then our contribution to the budget must be understood ahead of time, not for us to receive what already has been decided upon, and then you're expecting us to comply. That is not bargaining. Coming to deliver to me already, an already cast in stone case, then you're asking me to accept it. No, it's not possible.
So could then the strategy not be from government that, you know, just because, you know, teachers are likely to go back to work next year, so they got time to prevaricate, to have the discussion. People go away on holiday and so forth. So how do you create an urgency between now and then, given that some people have already gone into holiday mode?
Let me be honest with you. Some of these things really should not matter to us in terms of what will happen here or when. The issue is, if this government really cares about the civil service, it must take the signals from what we have given them to mean that they should just act. They should find ways to make sure that because this is not just about teachers. We have all the other government workers who are represented in the Apex Council, in the offices there, in the registry, everywhere, all over the place. These are not the only people that government should be worrying about. It's not just the teachers that government should be worrying about. Of course, the teachers constitute the majority. But the issue is that we expect that a government with its name will be able to look after its workers. Internationally, governments always look after their workers, because these are the people who really handle their work. We are their servants. Perhaps they misinterpret the word servants to mean slaves. I don't know. But if I want to be honest, the ball is in government's court to see what it will do about this.
I think, like, the urgency is not about whether schools will open next year or not. I think this is where we're getting it wrong. It's about the level of responsibility and the desire to keep quality public education on track. Because if every year, every term, we are talking about opening and closing of schools, then that means our mindset is not in the development of the child's education. Our mindset is in the keeping of the system and making people believe it is working when it is not. Now, the deep-seated effect of that, or impact, is that the teacher's morale will go down, and when their motivation is low, then the level of education of our children will be compromised, because you have an angry, hungry teacher who is demotivated, overworked with so many children, overcrowded classrooms, poor environment, and that combination is a disaster. The dream of going to 2030 with a upper middle income economy will be shattered, because it is the foundation given by education that will contribute to the human resources that must turn around this economy. This is the level of responsibility we are bringing every time. So when we talk here and people say, what will happen next year, I tend to wonder why we are thinking in short term when we should be thinking in long term. What is the impact of a poorly equipped, a poorly financed education system?
And also that goes for the civil service, the services, because civil service is where we get our services, you know. It's where we get our birth certificates. It's where we get all these other things that with these services. And when civil servants are disgruntled, then we have a problem.
Mm.
Yeah, and austerity for me, for prosperity as a mantra, to me, it looks like it doesn't really live up to its billing in terms of the fact that we are... It's the workers who are simply bearing the weight of prosperity, of austerity, while others are enjoying the prosperity. That's what it seems like now. Because what has happened immediately this came in is that there is an exclusionary element to it, where some people are actually, at least those who have access to foreign currency, because their business or their lease are enjoying are having the best of it all, while the workers are being excluded from the economy. I think that's the same. But yeah,
it's like blessed are the poor, for theirs is in heaven.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an oxymoron to suggest that the two, the positive and the negative that you are talking about, go together. To me, that it doesn't work. I mean, just playing with words. What do we mean when we say austerity? I think when we say austerity, to me, it's not austerity for prosperity, but austerity to restructure, rebase the economy. And for prosperity, who is prospering in the austerities now? I'm not sure whether this makes any sense, but if we are restructuring the economy, then you should tell us how long shall we take. In as much as we can calculate how much tax we will collect, we know when we should be reducing the budget deficit to a point where we are not overburdening the workers anymore in terms of tax.
Larry, but, can I compliment? You know, the issue here is, when we talk to government about its vision 2030 and all that, it is important that they understand that for any economic vision or program to succeed, it is to be done with the buy-in of citizens. And workers are a very critical cog in that respect. Government should consult before making decisions that affect people. And in this case, we have seen a monetary regime that does not quite make sense. To say we have the US dollar, we have RTGS, we have bond. And we have people who just have access to RTGS and bond. And we have people who don't have access to US dollars. And then you are allowing in the same economy some of the services, some of the goods to be sold in foreign currency. Now, if I'm a teacher, I want to buy a car, I have to find foreign currency to pay duty. Yet my salary is in RTGS. And if I take my RTGS as salary and do the illegal thing to change that money on the black market, if I'm caught, I go to jail for 10 years. This is the scenario. So you're saying a very important part of this society is on the outside looking in. I've just given an example of a car. Some have said cars are luxuries, but that's not necessarily the case. People need to travel. So I think we have, when we had our meeting with government, one of the issues which may not suffice for this meeting that came up is this idea of the IMF. The IMF has been in the country. I understand you met them. And they always come up with these prescriptions. These prescriptions that are not necessarily pro-poor. These are the same people who brought about the crisis that came up during the Economic Structural Adjustment Program in 1992. And so, is government listening to us or the IMF? And when we look at the IMF and some of these multilateral lending agencies, where on earth have they ever done an economy any good?
I mean, I guess that's a discussion for that's a bigger discussion.
Because that's what I said, but I was trying to say, at least in my own limited way, government should consult us, not these are people who may have other motives other than to, because this is where the word austerity comes in. So it's an IMF term.
So I'm going to ask a question. First of all, you're going to read a message from Stephen Kweza Aramba, and you can ask in response to this. There's the issue of the grievances on the labor laws and labor ministry was left in shambles by previous ministers. Says to have and they have to be addressed as a matter of urgency. Besides that, workers are vulnerable to unfair treatment and poor remuneration. How much effort is actually being put? Because someone said, I'm like, hey, I haven't heard the noise around realignment of labor laws and strengthening of labor laws to protect the worker as much as I hear other laws that affect different aspects of society. So how much effort is actually being put into doing that? What has been done so far?
Okay, I will come in and then Sifiso can complement a bit. But let me say, at the level of the Apex Council, we have been pushing for the alignment of, or the harmonization of our labor law. And I'm sure the principles we put in place, Sifiso will have something to say about that. And these principles were before the last republic fell. Those principles were supposedly now in before cabinet. And the problem that happens is pushing, you would want to push, because that is the only thing that matters, to be able to get your labor rights so that you have your destiny in your own hands. But how do we push under the current environment except to plead with government? Because that's the consultative framework that exists to try and impress upon government and try to appeal to their moral rectitude to say, this is what you should do. You should just align the laws. So we were told they were before cabinet, now they were supposed to go to parliament, and you never really get clear answers from government as to exactly what it is that they want to do about the labor laws. And the workers are just in limbo as far as that is concerned.
I think the push has been very strong, and it's been sustained since the enactment of the new constitution, or the constitution that we are using now. It's no longer new anyway.
5 years now.
It has got some transitional clauses which allow government to have some laxity, which allows government to carry on with even bad legislation to its advantage. And we don't seem to be having any agency, because if you check the speeches that were read by the then president, R.G. Mugabe, during some parliamentary opening sessions, twice he mentioned that the labor law reform would be tabled before parliament and the new law would come into effect. And the attempt was that we harmonize it so that we have one labor law for all workers in the country. But there is also a feeling from the public from the civil service, that civil servants should not belong to that. And that is the wedge that has been driven by the employer to make sure that civil servants get out of the tripartite negotiating forum. And when they come out of the tripartite negotiating forum, they can be dealt exclusively under different principles, or whichever principle they did. They had promised that they would copy the same principles. Then we wondered the logic of simple copying and pasting the same principles that are in the harmonized labor law to the Public Service Act. And that unreadiness to have the civil servants in the rest of the group is an indication of government's unwillingness to enter on a collective bargaining which will eventually lead to co-determination of objectives regarding the conditions of service. So the push has been very strong. It is angering. What is now probably left is for Apex and the rest of the civil servants to take a decisive action to either disband themselves from the Apex completely, and then probably have something else outside. But that is impossible, because as he said, Apex is a creation of a statute which is a result of a Public Service Act which only empowers the current minister to use that piece of law for purpose of consulting you. And if you are outside that body, you are excluding yourself from the processes of engagement, and nobody can engage you outside the law. So the force that you can only do is what I would say, let's let the things move as they are, and that will be also detrimental to our destiny, because we will not be inside to control some of the bad habits.
Okay, before we go, from Apex, I want to ask this question. How confident are you that you're going to find a solution, and as far as this is concerned?
It's not such an easy question for me to answer. But when you go into any situation, you go there with the confidence that you are going to find a solution. I don't think as a nation we cannot afford to lose hope. We realize the kind of entanglement that government finds itself in terms of the economic and other situations that it faces. We appreciate that. And we know that it affects every one of us as Zimbabweans, and not just the civil servants. It's a lot of people the majority of people are also facing up to this economic demise, this quagmire that we find ourselves in. But I believe that Zimbabweans have gone through worse, and that there will be a sobering of thought on the part of everybody. And I think that what is critical now, which I believe government should do, and that government should sit down and reflect on, is that there is need for greater consultation with citizens, sit down under the same tent, and put away. But if we put aside some of the splinterism that we see even in the union movement, the splinterism that we see amongst politicians and civil society groups, and people come together and realize that we have a collective will to survive. We have to survive. We have to live better lives. We have to be happy. And I'm confident that there are ways people can rectify this. I believe in that government need to address certain fundamentals without an apology. The government must address the monetary regime that is existing now and really come up with a currency system that works. Failure to do that, then it will be a hopeless situation. But personally, I am an avowed optimist. I believe that there are ways people can always find solutions to problems. If not in the short run, then in the long run.
Yes, I think, Larry, let us strengthen. Yes, there's a reason. If we can strengthen the role of trade union in the social and economic governance of the country, we'll find a solution. And one of the solutions also obviously lies in government getting out from being a business person. That is the dangerous part, where the government is acting as a business person, as an employer, as a regulator. So government should only be a facilitator for business. Why I say so is some of the money that we're talking about for social services is probably drained by some of our predecessors, like your Air Zimbabwe, your ZESA, your railways, your Zisco.
All right. Oh, that's the voice of Sifiso Lovuthu, Chief Executive Officer of Zimbabwe Teachers Association, and as well before him, Mr. David Zasunga, who is the Secretary for the Apex Council. Thank you both of you coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sheila, with our stories coming next, I'm back with you tomorrow between 7:30 and 9 p.m. Stay tuned to ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. And as I always say, from where I come from, my name is Larry Kwedirai. Asilwe Siyasebenza. Take care of yourself.